Well, already this has been a very successful sermon because I've had about five of you ask me, what in the world are you going to talk about? I haven't had this much fun since I preached on the hangover a few years ago. And the congregation showed up with fear and trembling. So we began our summer blockbuster sermon series with the new movie Book Club, which features four women who've known each other for years, since college, and have met monthly for a book club. The women are, by and large, successful, but given 40 years from college and more, aging. One of them is a quite successful hotel owner who never seemed to have time for a successful relationship. One of them is a judge, divorced many years, with a son grown. One of them is an empty nester, trying to reconnect or strengthen her relationship with her husband. And one of them is a recent widow. Her husband had passed a year ago, and her two daughters are very worried about mom living on her own at her age. You laugh like you understand what the... You may have heard parts of this story before. And the wrinkle in the story is, at one of their book club meetings, one of them suggests they read 50 Shades of Grey. Now, I've never read 50 Shades of Grey, so I can't comment on it beyond what I've read about 50 Shades of Grey, so I won't. The interesting thing in the movie is they don't comment much on it either, but it becomes a point of catharsis, a way of changing the things in the lives of these four women of this book club. That's the basic story. I haven't given too much away, so if you still want to see it, it's enjoyable. It's got lots of laughs. And it's a bunch of old pros that are just having a good time, I think. And that's always a fun thing to watch on the screen. But what does that have to do with our faith? Well, the short answer is that this is a very common theme religiously. It's a very common theme. It is the theme that Christ steps into the prophecies of Israel, particularly after the exile in Babylon. After Jerusalem is captured by foreigners, after the temple is desecrated by foreigners, by unbelievers, and destroyed, and the people are convinced that their lives are over, and what does God have in store for them, if anything? And frequently we get... Will somebody go out and let Stephanie in? Frequently we get mentions of hope in the prophets, in Isaiah, in Ezekiel especially, but in several of the prophets, that God has not abandoned Egypt, that God will again return God's people to Jerusalem, and God's presence will return to a temple on the mount in Jerusalem. And we get lots of prophecies like Isaiah 35. Isaiah 35 is very interesting because it's written particularly to those exiled, probably towards the end of the exile in Babylon, which lasted 70 years. So they're old and feeble, the ones that remember Jerusalem and went blind and on crutches, but they're going to get to come back. And in fact, God will prepare a highway, a holy way, just for them, where they will not be assailed, and they will be allowed to return back to the promise of living in God's holy, not just holy nation, but holy presence. They'll be restored. Or as Frank Sinatra always used to sing, the best is yet to come. That's the theme of this movie, right? In fact, at one point, one of these four women says to others, I'm not dead yet. I may be old, Maybe even most of my life is behind me, but I'm not dead yet. There is something yet in store. And that's the prophecy that God gives for God's people. First to the Jews that went into exile when Jerusalem was captured and destroyed. But then through Jesus to all of us. That in a certain way, all of the world lives in exile right now. That while God is present, this is not God's perfect presence. Just turn on the news. It won't take you but 5 minutes. And probably less than that. To know that this is not God's holy kingdom. That it's broken. We're waiting for the best that is yet to come. So that's the worldview. And in some ways, it's the worldview of our faith, if we admit it. And it's the worldview of this movie, in a nutshell. But a couple other interesting things that I'd rather focus on this morning than, I mean, we can, if you've got questions about that, I'll go further into that worldview. One is about 50 Shades of Grey, though. You see, because the in-between time of exile to restoration, there's something that the Hebrew prophets call the Day of the Lord. And it gets described in a variety of ways. But the one thing that is clear in every description is that it is something that is unexpected and almost unimaginable, even to the people of faith. And frequently, it's terrible. It's awful. In fact, some of the descriptions sound almost ungodlike. Well, in this movie, the cathartic point is 50 Shades of Grey, which brings all sorts of discomfort to people, right? Because of its subject matter and what we think it's about, because if we haven't read it, or what we know about it if we have read it. Why does that book change anything in the lives of these four mature women? They don't suddenly go out and try to role play it or live it out. It's something awful and something very different from the rest of their lives. And yet, it's the thing that motivates the change from where they are to where they end up. And the Day of the Lord is going to be like that. I don't think we're going to read a trilogy of books in a book club and it's going to happen. I think it'll be a little more awful than that. We focus more on where we're at and where we're going. And a few people focus on that middle, what's going to happen to get us from point A to point B. That's the whole Left Behind series, by the way. All 14 of those books and others focus on that process and all of the ups and downs and unexpected things within it. That's why I kind of like the use of, when I watched the film and thought about it, I like the way 50 Shades of Grey was used in it. It tied really well into, again, this religious worldview. I'm sure that the author did not realize that, and that's okay. That's okay. That's something for us to be aware of and to take seriously. But the thing I'd mostly like to focus on is that through this change from point A to point B, these women are together. They've known each other for years, which means they know each other intimately, deeply. There's no surprises. There's no false fronts. There's no pretending everything's okay when it's not. They see through each other because they've seen those defense mechanisms. They learned them in year 4, 35 plus years ago. None of that. No lying. They can't lie to each other. And because they can't lie to each other, they can admit their frailty, their frustrations, and they can be supported through them, even through some of their doubts and anxieties. In a nutshell, that's what the gift of the church is supposed to be to our broken world. I don't know that we always live up to that. In fact, frequently I worry that we don't live up to much of it. As a place where we can be honest with each other, where we can admit truly our brokenness, our imperfections, our embarrassments, and support each other and love each other still, regardless, and then help each other through some of the darker times. I read an article in Christian Century that was, I think it was in an early April edition, maybe late March, from a book of by this woman who was a young mother. And she kept going to this mother's group at the church, and they kept trying to teach her how she could have better quality time with God, how she could find that 20 minutes of quiet prayer time and Bible study time with her young toddler. And eventually one of them suggested she get up about 4:45 so she could have that 20 minutes of time. I cannot repeat in church, this was a religious magazine, but I cannot repeat in church what she wrote that she said to that woman. Because it was slightly profane, but it was very true. What nonsense is that? How is that restful or peaceful or holy to get up to add one more to-do item to the to-do list that's already cram-packed full of stuff? How does that develop anybody's faith? But then she went on to say, but, you know, part of that was that most of us in that room were lying to each other. She didn't quite put it in that words, but we were putting up fronts. We kept saying everything was okay. And some of those women insisted they could do it all. They could be good and attentive and present mothers and show up at all the church committee meetings and be in charge of the vacation Bible school and it was no problem. And sometimes when we come to church, we're like that. And a little bit of avoidance of our problems is okay. This is supposed to be a sanctuary, a safe place. It's supposed to be a place where we can maybe remind ourselves that the headaches that seem to consume us so often are not the whole of our lives. But sometimes I think we just try to be good Christians. Good Christians don't get mad. Good Christians have it all together. Good Christians have families where everybody shows up with all of their clothes on and all of their shoes on when we get out of the car. We didn't make that this morning. It wasn't my shoes either, in case you were wondering. My shoes were on, but there were other shoes that were not on when we got out of the car this morning. You know? And some of that is because the church has a history of being a little judgmental about people who don't meet certain standards and criteria, or a lot judgmental. Is that what the laugh is over there, Neil? Or a lot judgmental about people who don't meet our, by the way, let me emphasize that pronoun, our standards, not God's, the standards we claim for God in God's name. This movie is a reminder. It's lighthearted. It's silly. It's not. This is not a deep movie. But this is a reminder of the value of the relationships that we're supposed to have in Christ's name with one another. Authentic relationships. Relationships that recognize our brokenness and our imperfection. Our theology says all people have sinned. All of us have made mistakes and probably even continue to make them. But Lord knows we never say that unless we do something truly awful and we can't get out of it. We're drug into confessing half the time, kicking and screaming, rather than just admitting, I didn't get that done. We need that kind of authentic support. I imagine some of us have it in our families or in our close friends. It would be good if we had it in this room. And if we could exhibit it in a way that invited other people to experience it and share in it too. We all like to pretend, I think, you know, going back to the prophecy of Isaiah, we're not blind, we're not deaf, we don't have feeble knees. We're not on a cane or crutches or walker in a wheelchair. The heart's ticking just fine. The lungs working perfectly. The alarm clock rings at 5:15 for our hour of devotional time every morning, and we just get up bright-eyed and bushy-tailed because we are God's people. Sarah can tell you that if I get up at 5:15, I'm sick. It is not to read the Bible. And if I'm praying, it's for something, some very particular and immediate need, not in a larger sense. And I imagine, though I will not judge your daily calendars and timetables, that that is true for most of us. Let's own it. Let's love each other and not worry so much about it. Let's remember, yeah, we're God's people, God's special creation. Flawed, broken. Maybe our eyesight is failing. Maybe our hearing is shot. Man, those feeble knees. I keep coming back to the feeble knees. Maybe all of our knees are feeble. Or bionic. A couple of you have bionic knees to take care of those feeble knees. It's okay. God has a place for us and a purpose for us now, and a place for us and a purpose for us in the future. In the movie, one of the women, the widow, goes out on a date, and they're talking about their first kisses, and she says, "I cannot remember my first kiss," which may or may not be a defense mechanism. Could not tell. She says, "But I'm happy to tell you about my best kiss." And her date, in a wonderful pickup line, says, "Well, maybe it hasn't happened yet." I share that line because it's in the trailer, so I'm not giving any of the movie away that they haven't given away already in promoting it. What if the best is yet to come? Truly. Our culture teaches us as we get older, and many of you in this room know this far better than I do, as we get older, we're more and more broken. We're more and more disconnected. We're more and more ready to be put out to pasture. But what if we believed through the eyes of faith and through the promises of God that the best is yet to come? What if we truly believed that? And what if we lived like it? So those are some of the religious themes that I've found in Book Club. Does that surprise some of you? I didn't ask how many of you had seen it. Will it embarrass you to ask? I mean, I've seen it. Okay, so a fair number of you have gone out and seen this. Is that a fair interpretation, for, do you think, of the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes.
Questions?
Short version.
Comments for the short version of the movie? Yes. The usher afterwards said he hadn't seen it yet, but he said, "I heard it. People say it's kind of like an hour and a half version of The Golden Girls, in a good way." Yeah. I said, "Well, I guess. I don't know." Questions? Other thoughts? Stunned silence?
The one thing I would say about it is we do put up a front when they come to church.
Yeah.
And my problem is, I have these tapes playing in my brain that my mother and my father, but mainly my mother, said, you know, "You got to have a tie." Mm-hmm. I have these things playing in my head over and over and over, and I can't get the tape to shut up.
We all have those tapes. And by the way, I'm a little harsh on those tapes this morning. Let me defend those tapes in one respect. Because I imagine part of them, now I've gotten all jumbled up here. I think part of them comes from a good and a faithful place. And that is the teaching in the scriptures that we are to be God's temple. That when we present ourselves in God's presence, we're supposed to recognize that we're on holy ground. We're in God's presence. And so we should, you know, not be lackadaisical about it. Not be just offhand about it. Oh yeah, going to church.
This woman ironed my underwear.
But, you know, and so, yeah, I know. So dressing up, you know, ties and nice shoes and pressed undergarments. you know, is a part of one way we might live out our reverence, right? Our recognition that this is holy ground. And I understand, I think that part of the teaching is good, but I think it's led to more problems than it's solved. I think it's easy, though, for us to be a little lackadaisical and a little... lackadaisical is not quite the right word I'm looking for. That we can almost take God's presence for granted in our lives. And that's not good either. But, yeah, I don't think... Well, I'm grateful to see there... Is anybody wearing a tie this morning? Man, our mothers are all ashamed of us.
Supposed to respect. That was part of it.
That's right. It's part of respect.
Yes, part of respect. So
yeah.
You came to church dressed up, and I can remember there were women that wore hats.
Absolutely. Cover your head in God's sanctuary. But
some of them.
Hats and veils over the hair, yes.
And yeah. I remember one lady, and I was anxious when I was a little girl to see what hat she had on.
Mm-hmm.
Because she always had a different
hat. She always had a different hat. Yeah.
But, yeah, it was out of respect.
That's right, out of respect. I mean, here's an example of that. Here's an interesting example of that with the communion table. There were those of us, men, it's a generation before me, but I heard it, which is that you don't serve at the Lord's table without a jacket on, a sports coat or a suit coat on. And that was a particularly interesting thing when we allowed, finally recognized, that women should be elders too. And so the question was then, what is appropriate for a woman, a female elder, to wear to the table? And frequently they would have to wear jackets to the Lord's table to serve as an elder. I don't know if that was true in this congregation, but it was true in many, that there's a dress code. And it was a slightly odd dress code in order to try and live out that respect. And I think looking back, we can recognize that more of that was about us than about God. But the respect part is good. I don't mean to back away from that. That's important. But the ways we live out that respect can be
a little more
misguided.
Casual, too.
And I think we can be more casual. Yeah. Well, obviously, I think we can be more casual.
Yeah, obviously.
Cindy.
Dean and I also grew up in an age where we wore dresses.
Mm-hmm.
We did not wear pants.
We
don't wear anything.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, some of it is a cultural change. A lot of it is a cultural change. More than it's kind of a church change, church culture change that has been drug along by the cultural change of we're a more casual culture overall. Women
wouldn't go to church with me in pants.
Mm-hmm.
You can't wear pants.
Yeah, women couldn't wear pants to church. I was reading another article somewhere where I mentioned how the pastor, this was back in the 50s, felt he had to mow his grass in a tie because he was the pastor. I swear, you better come and look and help me find a doctor if I'm mowing the grass in a tie.
many years ago, I heard an old minister say, you don't have to dress fancy to go to church, but always wear the best you've got.
Yeah, you don't have to dress fancy. Wear good stuff.
Makes sense.
That's a way to honor God and honor others in the community. But, Ron?
I remember first church. I went to a hospital without a tie once. Asked to see a clergy file. They asked me, are you clergy? I said, yes. They asked me, what church? And they said, well, you're not dressed like one. I said, well, why is one dressed like?
Weren't wearing a tie or a collar?
Yeah. I was in blue jeans.
Yeah. The preacher in blue jeans.
You know what's sad today? That we have to lock the doors.
Church. It is sad that we have to do
what
that.
When I grew up, we had the doors open all day. We was able to leave our doors open at home.
Yeah.
That is what's so sad today. God's either working harder in our life today than I believe he ever has before, because we have a lot of tragedy in our life, and I believe God's working in our life today. But and what's sad, we need to watch the people come in that door, because that gal felt rejected. I know the lady, but she felt rejected because that door was
locked.
So I think it's really important that we watch that door, people come up there to you know, if we're going to do this,
it's challenging to figure out how to balance all these things. Because again, the word is sanctuary, which means safety, right. And trying to figure out how we do that in a culture that is
right
is hard. Yeah. And we struggle with that in our homes and in schools and in our businesses. And
Pastor Josh?
Yes, please. How about last comment? I think, yeah.
It was about adapting to change. Mm. And that's what Jerry's talking about, mm-hmm. actually. You know, and as you grow older, what you have to accept, like from those daughters, and what you don't have to accept, mm-hmm. just adapting to. I know turning 70 last year, I felt like I was in a grave. I mean, mm-hmm. and I haven't adapted to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really, my mindset was entirely, it was like I moved into a different realm and I was on the way out now. You know, so that movie, I need to adapt.
Yeah, a lot of the movie seems to be about the necessity of adaptation, of accepting some changes that are kind of thrust upon us and looking for new opportunities. And both of those are present in this film. Both of those are present in the scriptures, and I hope both of them are present in your lives. That's how we keep on living. Yeah, things are going to be thrust upon us. Some things we don't like. Every once in a while, some things we do like. But there's also going to be opportunities, unexpected opportunities that come our way. And
well, and also I think there's a part of the movie that's about dealing with others' expectations. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot about others' expectations in the movie.
When yours are
different. Yeah. Yeah. And how you navigate that, especially when it's people that you love who have those differing expectations for how you should act or live, which in some ways goes back to how we behave in church, how we were taught to behave in worship. Anyway, so that's at least some thoughts on the religious themes in Book Club. Next week, religious themes in, Solo, A Star Wars Story, the backstory of Han Solo. So if you've seen some of the Star Wars movies that have Han Solo in them, even if you haven't seen Solo, you'll know some of what we're going to talk about. It's exciting, all the meetings of Han and Chewbacca and Lando Calrissian. Anyway, so that's next week.